Welcome to Zoomed Leadership with your host, John Schmidt. This program will take you behind the scenes and deepen your understanding about the patterns and perspectives of leadership today. Now, here's your host, John Schmidt.
Well, hello, everyone. Welcome again to this week's edition of Zoomed Leadership. I am your host, John Schmidt, and again today, as I've been doing every week for the last 18 months, I'll be taking us out to the big picture, into the up close and personal, and toward a world of desirable futures, those, as we like to say here, with the essence of constant renewal, rich with that for sure. Well, it's a pleasure to be back after this post-holiday weekend here in the States. And I must say, here in the States, we have had words that have been filling the air everywhere, in our families, in our communities, in our states, in and across our nations, and the words that we've had, even with our own President Barack Obama, filled the airways with a Thanksgiving Day message, and conservative radio talk show host Rush Limbaugh filled the airways in return with a contrasting and attacking rebuttal of words. Actually, you might even begin to think of these two as thesis a la Obama and antithesis a la Limbaugh, although Limbaugh seems not yet to be infused with an underlying view toward wholeness that perhaps someone like Nietzsche might reveal. But words, that's part of our discussion, the distinction, the polarity, black and white, tall, short, liberal, conservative, good and evil, all created by the human mind, all with meaning in the context of particular experiences and mindsets, all dependent on the human consciousness that hears and understands them. So as you might be gathering today on Zoomed, we are all about words. Words as catalysts, words as power, words as the gateway to synthesis, words as the groundbed to shift toward new forms of living in the world and this era of extraordinary change we've been talking about here on Zoomed. Our show today continues our broad through-line theme of shifts, including, as I have been saying, and our moniker would represent, including shifts of mind. It is today about changing our words and changing our world. It is about understanding the distinctions and the separations created in our words, and it's about understanding our leader role in bridging our words into renewed possibilities for the future. My guest today for this exploration is Janet Smith Warfield, author of the lovely book, Shift, Change Your Words, Change Your World. It's a Next Generation winner of Indie Book Club Awards, and she's been added as a recent addition to 50 Great Writers You Should Be Reading. I met Janet just a couple of weeks ago at a workshop on the subject of transition, which we've talked about here on Zoom, and I have delighted in her presence and her book since we have met. Janet, just by way of introduction, has been an attorney, where she has learned how to use words as clearly as possible, and through her unique combination of holistic, creative, and right brain transformational experiences, certainly that we'll talk about, and with her 22 years of rigorous left brain law practice, she's learned how to sculpt words in atypical ways to shift listeners into experiences beyond words, transforming turmoil into a variety of states, including inner peace. Janet graduated from Swarthmore College and has a cum laude from Rutgers. She lives in Venice, Florida, not far from our Sarasota studio. Janet, a delight to have you. Thanks for joining me today on Zoomed.
Well, thank you so much, John. I'm delighted to be here.
Well, we've got a lot we can explore, and I love this topic of words. And as I have said to you through our conversations in the last couple of weeks, I certainly have enjoyed your book. But let me start with a personal sense here, Janet, with words. You have a personal experience with words, probably started, as we've talked about it, I think you expressed in the books, 40 years ago. Maybe you can start with a little bit of your own experience, what happened and where that's led you into this exploration with words and meaning.
Well, I certainly can start with that because I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing if I hadn't had some really exceptional personal transformation experiences with words when I was around 30 years old. It first started for me when my youngest son, Russ, was born, and my oldest son, Bill, who was 5 years old, suddenly began wetting the bed again. At first, I ignored it. I figured maybe it was just a one-time thing. I wasn't real happy about this because it made so much extra work for me. But Bill wet the bed. I ignored it. Next morning, the bed was still wet. I figured it was about time to have a talk with Bill. Everybody knows a five-year-old is too old to wet the bed. Maybe he doesn't understand this. Mm-hmm. Maybe I need to explain it to him. So we sat down, and we had our little discussion where I explained to him why he was too old to wet the bed, and he sat there and looked at me and nodded his head. The next morning, the bed was still wet. I was getting a little more frustrated. I raised my voice. Next morning, the bed was still wet. And I even spanked him once. Next morning, the bed was still wet. And I knew I was getting out of control. Around that time, my mother gave me a book called Summerhill by an English schoolmaster, A.S. Neal. Now, Neal had a very strange way of dealing with the problem kids in his English boarding school. When one of his students misbehaved in some way in the classroom, Neal didn't smack him on the wrists or throw him into the coat room or make him stay after school and write 100 times why what he done was wrong. Neal didn't do any of that. Instead, he just gave the child a penny. And I'm thinking, he did what? That doesn't make any sense. But in his book, Neal described situation after situation after situation where, when he gave a misbehaving child a penny, the bad behavior stopped. Well, I was pretty desperate with this bedwetting problem, and everything that society had taught me as to how to handle it had not worked. So I figured, okay, I'll give this a shot. I don't understand it at all. It doesn't make sense, but I can follow a model that's out there for me. I'll try it and see what happens. The next morning, the bed was wet. I didn't say a word, just went to my wallet, got a penny, gave it to Bill, and walked away. And he was kind of looking at me as if to say, I wonder what's wrong with her this morning. This is not normal mother behavior. But he never wet the bed again. And I'm watching this, and I'm thinking, holy mackerel, this is pretty powerful. And it's really easy, too, because by simply shifting my own actions and my own behavior, I stopped the bedwetting indirectly. I couldn't do it by applying pressure directly on Bill, but by changing myself, the relationship between us changed, and then Bill's conduct changed. Well, I couldn't stop thinking about this, and I figured I'm going to play with this in other areas of my life. The next incident is where I had a mystical experience. I call it a mystical experience, and I can tell you why after I describe what happened. One day, a man came to my door. I don't remember who he was. I don't remember what he wore. I don't remember what he said or what the problem was. I just know that he was angry, and he was angry with me. In the past, I might have defended what I had done or explained to him why I had done what I'd done, or maybe I would have said something like, oh, you shouldn't be angry over a little thing like that. That really isn't important. I didn't do any of those things, and no, I didn't give the man a penny. However, all I said was, I'm very sorry. What can I do to make this right? And just like that, his anger stopped. And when he left, we were friends. Hmm. And as he walked away, suddenly, now I don't know where this came from, but suddenly there popped into my head words I'd been taught as a child in Sunday school. Resist not evil, but turn the other cheek. And all of a sudden, I thought, oh my gosh, now I understand what those words mean. Now, nothing outside me changed. My living room was still there. My kids were still there. The front door was still there. But what changed suddenly was the way I understood those words I'd been taught as a child. They didn't mean what I had thought they meant. Again, those words made no sense to me. They made about as much sense as giving a child a penny for bad behavior. But the shift there in understanding the meaning of those words was, before I thought they meant if somebody is mean to me or nasty to me or ugly to me, I should just say, come on, do it again. You know, hit me on the left cheek. Okay, here's my right cheek. Hit me again. And deny my own needs and feelings in order to be kind to someone else. In the context of this experience with a man at the door, I realized that those words do not mean self-denial. They actually are self-affirmation. I was not doing what I did to be kind to the man at the door. I was doing it for very self-serving reasons. I was playing with a new idea. I was experimenting. I was inquisitive. And I wanted the anger to stop so that my motivation, my intention was self-serving. What we ended up with was a win-win solution. Now,
it's really interesting, Janet, just to break in for a second, but I hear two dimensions here. I hear one around perspective and perspective taking and the relationship of the inner and the outer, but I hear the other is the nature of acceptance, allowance, being where you are. And I know there's more to the story here, and I hear the music coming back in our ears. Let's pick up with that in a minute, because there's more to this, and I think this leads us into where we are going in the larger conversation about words and meaning, words and their implication, words and divides. Let's take a short break, folks. Janet with us, Janet Smith-Warfield with us today. Perspectives on words about ourselves, about transforming ourselves and the world. Take a short break. Be right back. Thanks.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network. The world is in flux, primed for a great transition, possibly an epical one. How does it impact you? Does it reshape the questions you ask? The way you view leadership? Today's complexities and challenges call for new realms of leadership. The world needs resilience and adaptability, new levels of innovation and brilliance. At Avastone Consulting, we know that our times call for shifts of mind. How do we cultivate real shifts of mind in our leaders? Not through conventional development, which focuses on gaining skills and knowledge within an established worldview. Shifts of mind truly expand the worldview itself, enlarge the capacity to see through new eyes, and transform interpretations of reality and the actions that accompany them. Those who embrace shifts of mind are the kind of leaders that Avastone helps to build. Change the way you pursue the future. Call Avastone Consulting at 1-678-461-8888. That's 1-678-461-8880. Or visit avastoneconsulting.com. Avastone Consulting, your source for leadership development, working with complex organizations toward evolutionary shifts of mind.
It's all Arizona, all over the world. If you're a local Arizona high school sports fan, or if you're a transplanted fan somewhere else in the world, have we got a show for you. The first internet sports radio talk show focusing solely on high school sports is The Coach's Corner with Scott Lovely. Tune in to talk about your favorite teams, players, or coaches. It's 100% Arizona high school sports coverage and a little bit more. Tune in Mondays at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Eastern, to the Voice America Sports Channel.
There's a course offered on Seventh Wave Network that you never saw offered in college. One that provides information on how to transform ancient wisdom teachings into everyday life. You'll learn how to create from your spirit and explore the world with all of your senses. Participation is encouraged. Enroll in Spirituality 101, the course you can't afford to miss, with your host, Reverend Norma. Classes in session every Friday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, 12 noon Pacific Time, in your favorite classroom, Seventh Wave Network. When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network. You're listening to Zoomed Leadership with your host, John Schmidt. For more information about John and our program, visit avastoneconsulting.com. That's A-V-A-S-T-O-N-E consulting.com. Now, back to Zoomed Leadership.
Okay, back again on this beautiful Monday. Janet Smith Warfield, our guest today, her book, Shift, Change Your Words, Change Your World. And Janet, you were really kicking us off with the perspective, sort of your personal experience, and you were describing that. Maybe you can say a little bit more about that and its evolution and the awareness that started to arise in you and where that started to take you.
Yeah, I certainly can. This was such an amazing experience to me. It truly was an ecstatic experience. The feeling was, oh my gosh, suddenly I understand, suddenly all the pieces of puzzles that I haven't understood before are falling into place for me. I wanted to tell everybody else about this experience and how easy it was. And I realized as I started talking about it that nobody had the foggiest idea what I was talking about. It was so clear to me, and it was like mud to everyone I was speaking with. And I'm thinking, what's wrong with my words here? How can I use different words to communicate this experience? I have called this experience with a man at the door a mystical experience. Now, all I'm doing here is making connections between that experience for me and some words written by William James in his book, Varieties of Religious Experience. In that book, and I started reading everything I could get my hands on after this experience, James laid out four characteristics of a mystical experience. One is it's ineffable. You can't put it into words. I was certainly having a huge problem putting it into words. I could, and yet nobody was hearing what I was saying. And then the second quality is it has a noetic quality. Noetic means knowing. Somehow you just know that you know, you understand. And then third, it's passive. It just showed up in my life. I wasn't looking for this experience. In fact, I didn't even know what a mystical experience was before I actually had the experience. You cannot will it to happen. And of course, I tie this in later on. I tied this in with some of the religious concepts of grace or salvation or transformation or transcendence. These aren't things that you will yourself to have. They kind of just come into your life somehow in some strange way. And the fourth characteristic was transience. The experience happens, and then you're kind of back in the same exterior life, and yet what you see outside of you suddenly has a different shape and a different form, and you start connecting words always to the experiential data that's out there in front of us, and you realize that we all chop this up. And then we stick word labels on it. And we all do this differently, which is why lots of times we don't communicate well with one another. If you think of all of us as simply being a part of a huge dynamic of energy, it's like a moving film, and you stop it for a minute so you can see just one frame of it, and you can chop it apart and analyze it and understand that one frame. But by stopping the dynamic and looking at the one frame, there's a lot that you miss. You see a part of it. You see a perspective. You see one way of looking at the full dynamic, but you don't experience the energy dynamic.
So you're going back to my point earlier, what you're really describing with words is it's a reflection of our individual experience, our individual context and livingness in the world and how that may vary, but it's also then an expression of that perspective in that one little still shot that we would take to try to express that to others in the world. And this really begins to get interesting, Janet, about the nature of those still shots. And maybe you can say a little bit more about that, because this slicing and dicing seems to me is an interesting way to begin to understand words, especially going back to, as I was describing, I just used President Obama and Rush Limbaugh as an example, and the way that things get sliced and diced and separated and sort of polarized in some ways. But can you say a little bit more about words in that context and maybe the divide and the nature of the meaning underpinning it?
Well, words automatically divide. You cannot have black without having white. You can't have high without having low. And these are all relative terms. As far as slicing the perspectives go, no perspective is wrong from that particular viewpoint. The challenge I think all of us get into is seeing our own perspective as being the only way to think, the only way to structure what we experience. And when we get into that fixed doctrinal mindset, we're not open to other ways of structuring experience and other people's perspective. We get into a very authoritarian, doctrinal, top-down, hierarchical mindset, which doesn't allow us to experience other ways of seeing the world that perhaps would work better for us. We get locked into a fixed position. We get locked into our single brain.
You seem to be describing much of what we're seeing today on many of the issues in the world and the way they're so contentious and polarized as a right versus a wrong, and the way there is a building sense of anger and resistance and all of that. It feels to me this is playing out in what we're reading more and more daily here, Janet.
Well, I don't think there's any question that it is for some people. And again, it plays out this way when each of us gets locked into our own mental doctrine, perspective, structure of how the world is. Instead of certainly expressing our own perspective, our fixed frame of the moving picture is not wrong, and it's absolutely right for us. The challenge is not being open to the other perspectives and thinking that there's only one way of structuring the dynamic. Mm. And you can move back and forth. It's really fascinating, because when you can be open to other ways of seeing, you can both be in that dynamic flow of living and using your own word energy as appropriate, but you can also stop the frames any place you want and look at a single frame. That's what science does a lot, I think. They stop the moving picture and look at a single frame so they can dissect it and analyze it and understand it. And that's very valuable in particular situations for particular purposes. But it doesn't allow us to experience the whole of being and living.
Well, maybe that's where this is really a poignant place that you're bringing out early, is that the positions and the polarities and the arguments that we're seeing and this way versus this way is not really containing more of the whole view. It is that sliced and diced isolation and separate perspective of this versus that. You're describing something then that underpins this whole film and this whole movie, a larger wholeness that's really at play. And I'm wondering what that is in language that you would point to.
Well, you see, this is the challenge, John. You cannot language it.
Uh-huh.
You can experience it. You can be it. You can use it as appropriate. But you cannot say these words are the truth. Because as soon as you say these words, this way of thinking, this structure is the truth, then the mind pops in and says, oh, if that's true, then this other thing over here must be false, and you get into the conflict and the separation. It's the words that separate. It's the doctrines that separate. But underlying the doctrines is this experience, this unifying, holistic experience, which any of us can have. And person after person after person has experienced and been throughout history, and there's so many examples of it. Socrates, Jesus, Buddha, Lao Tzu, it goes on and on and on and on. Every religious tradition, the wise elders in every religious tradition take this holistic experience that perhaps they have had, and then they want to communicate it to other people, so they think, now how can I shape this in a way that is going to have meaning for other people? And each one does it a little differently. So the words are different, but the underlying experience is not. And you cannot language it correctly. You can use words to point toward it.
Well, that's a wonderful, wonderful picture to be painted here, Janet, and I've got a number of places to go, but I hear the music building in the background, and I don't want to take us too quickly down a track that you can't answer very clearly, but this begins to bridge to me into the practicality of life and living life and recognizing the nature of the experiences and many of those that some of us might have, which have a real sense of wholeness and unity experience. How do we actually go about expressing ourselves in the practical living in the world on issues? That's where we want to go and include that as part of our dialogue next, folks. But let's take a short break. Come on back after a couple of minutes. Back here with Janet. Thanks. Come back soon.
Stocks, bonds, investment opportunities, financial news, and talk. We can help. Call us now toll-free, 866-472-5790. 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network. The world is in flux, primed for a great transition, possibly an epical one. How does it impact you? Does it reshape the questions you ask? The way you view leadership. Today's complexities and challenges call for new realms of leadership. The world needs resilience and adaptability, new levels of innovation and brilliance. At Avastone Consulting, we know that our times call for shifts of mind. How do we cultivate real shifts of mind in our leaders? Not through conventional development, which focuses on gaining skills and knowledge within an established worldview. Shifts of mind truly expand the worldview itself, enlarge the capacity to see through new eyes, and transform interpretations of reality and the actions that accompany them. Those who embrace shifts of mind are the kind of leaders that Avastone helps to build. Change the way you pursue the future. Call Avastone Consulting at 1-678-461-8888. That's 1-678-461-8880. Or visit avastoneconsulting.com. Avastone Consulting, your source for leadership development, working with complex organizations toward evolutionary shifts of mind.
It's football, pop culture, and everything in between. Get ready for The Game Plan with Anthony Herron, a.k.a. Big Ant. Anthony has a background in college and professional football and brings the player, coach, and broadcaster perspective to this weekly roundup of the top sports news and events. Big Ant wants to hear from you, too. Tune in to The Game Plan with Anthony Herron every Tuesday afternoon at 5 p.m. Eastern Time, 2 p.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Sports Channel. It's game time.
These days, everyone is looking for information on staying young, healthy, and fit. The Voice America Health and Wellness Network is here to help you on your quest to better health and a better you. We talk about everything from diet, fitness, and aging to substance abuse, personal growth, mental health, and much more. Learn from our experts who cover health and wellness from traditional and holistic perspectives. Tune in to the Voice America Health and Wellness Network. Healthy living starts here.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Zoomed Leadership with your host, John Schmidt. For more information about John and our program, visit avastoneconsulting.com. That's A-V-A-S-T-O-N-E consulting.com. Now, back to Zoomed Leadership.
Okay, we're back with Janet Smith-Warfield. We are today all about words. We are about their impact, their underlying foundation. We're talking about words and meaning, words as separation and dualistic divides, really heading into much more of the larger picture of the words as catalyst to this larger ground that we're speaking to. But Janet, pick us up from where you were in terms of the nature of the conversation and how we can begin to think, maybe at least point to some practicality here of this. The words are insufficient in really fully describing our experience, but yet we actually have to engage with others.
Yeah. If I may, let me talk a little bit. I can do analogies. Analogies work very well, so I can use specifics to give people some words that maybe they can work with themselves in their own lives. The transformational experience itself happens immediately because it is a sudden perception shift and a sudden consciousness shift. The best analogy I've been able to find for what happened with me and the man at the door is to use optical illusions. Most of your listeners are probably familiar with the old hag, young woman optical illusion. It's been around for at least a century, I think.
Uh-huh. The ink blotter, yep.
You can certainly Google it. Mm-hmm. I think it's on my website as well. But nothing, the lines on that piece of paper, in that optical illusion, don't change. The real world, whatever's out there, doesn't change. What changes is the way your mind structures what is out there, how your mind structures the sensory data around you. Now, when you're looking at that old hag, young woman optical illusion, either you're going to see the old hag or you're going to see the young woman. If you see the old hag, maybe it makes you think of your own death. Maybe you think she's ugly. She's kind of depressing. You don't really want to look at her. It kind of drains your energy. But if you see the pretty young woman, maybe it makes you feel young and vibrant and energetic. So depending on what you see in those fixed lines, your whole energy field will change, and you have a choice. Once you can see both the young woman and the old hag, you have a choice as to where you're going to focus and how you're going to structure those lines and colors in front of you. A real master at this is John Langdon. He's a graphic artist who lives in Philadelphia. I believe his website is johnlangdon.net. He has a wonderful ambigram optical illusion on his website called Love. Well, when you look at that optical illusion, you will either see love or you will see hate. Nothing on the paper changes. Nothing in the real world changes. What changes is the way your mind structures what that sensory data in front of you. Now, if you see hate, you're probably feeling perhaps anger, you're feeling judgment, your energy is perhaps drained and dark and heavy. If you see love, same lines, same colors, if you see love, you're feeling light, energetic, warm, connected. It's a whole different energy. And the thing is, once you can see both and once you have the awareness to see both, you can change your own energy field. There are other ways you can do this. We've probably all heard forever, well, be grateful for what you have. That sounds like a should. And should is a word that I would suggest you get out of your vocabulary. It's not useful or helpful. However, there's a really good reason for being grateful for all the good things in your life, and that is it's not because you ought to be grateful, but because it changes your own energy field. When you start noticing all the good things in your life instead of all the miserable, rotten, bad things that the media often throws out in front of us all the time, and we sit there and we suck it all up, and then we feel drained and afraid and angry and all that other stuff. You focus on the good things in your life. And just a really good practice is every morning, sit down and just make a list of all the things that you can be grateful for. Do you have a bed to sleep in? Do you have food to eat? Do you have sunshine and beautiful sunsets and wonderful climates perhaps sometimes? Do you have clothes on your back? Do you have a loving, supportive family? There are all kinds of things. And the more you start thinking and looking for the good things in your life, the higher your energy level is. I mean, some New Age thinkers talk about auras. Well, I mean, personally, I can't see auras, but I believe there are people out there who can. And it's an energetic field that surrounds you when you're focused on being grateful. So you don't do this for anybody except yourself.
So let's make this tangible and practical, just even bridging back to my opening comments here, Janet. All those are practical and tangible. Let me give you an example. Let's say that, as a talk show host, I'm having a conversation and I'm on the show with Rush Limbaugh. And Rush Limbaugh is doing his fairly recognizable rant about a particular perspective, and I'm providing a perspective that bridges from that into a number of perspectives, looked at things in a number of ways, and he, in fact, is then calling me, comes back and comes at me as a liar, cheat, and thief, and whatever the other words that Rush might like to use for people that don't express that same perspective, maybe calling me a Marxist as one. What do I do? What do you do? What do I do with the angry man in this case who's exhibiting that perspective?
Well, first of all, do you believe you're a liar, cheat, and thief?
Absolutely not.
Well, then his words aren't saying anything about you. They're just his rant and his perspective right now. They say much more about him than they could ever say about you. The only time they will say something about you is if you believe those words and you suck them into who you are, and then they will drain you, and then they will push you down, and then they will make you feel inferior. But your birthright is something more than that. So, and going back for a minute, if I were doing interviews, I doubt I would invite somebody like that onto my show simply because I don't want to give energy to that kind of rhetoric.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to give a public forum to that kind of rhetoric. It does not help any of us.
Well, the reason why I bring that out, though, that this is part of the reality that we're living and part of the reality of what we're seeing daily in Congress and we're seeing on the larger issues in the context of sustainability, the context of transitioning into an oil future that may have a much higher cost and all the implications of that, that we're really talking about people that are responding and providing a clear sense of narrow perspectives, singular views, and adamant about. So I'm just curious. One thing I hear you saying, Janet, is that there is our own interior response and not getting ruffled. But I'm wondering, I'm beginning to even think more about the words used in relation to others that begin to elevate this conversation in some way and begin to open the door for a new possibility. And I'm wondering if there are thoughts about that through your experiences and where you've been with this exploration.
Okay, can you rephrase that question for me? Because it's really not quite clear to me, John, where you want to take this.
Well, I'm just curious about it. If that one thing to do is not to have a Rush Limbaugh on a show, another thing to do is to not allow myself to get sucked into it, but then there is the reality of that the issues are on the table and people like Rush and others are really having very clear, distinctive perspectives on the issues that are very singular in focus and very adamant about a one-way view. How do we bridge that in the words and in the context of the larger whole?
I don't think you bridge it. Rush is certainly entitled to his perspective, just as each and every one of us is. The question for me, again, it's always a personal one. Does another person's rhetoric make me feel energetic and positive and functional, or does it drain me and destroy me? And if it drains me and destroys me, I don't give it any energy. I pretty mm-hmm. much turn my back and walk away. I turn off the TV when there's violence on the TV. I turn off the news when it's nothing but violence, because all that energy that's coming toward us from the media and the politicians, it doesn't help me live in the least. So I don't give it energy. I don't give it my personal energy. I can't change Rush. I can't change the politicians. But I can change myself.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess as we're bridging into the last segment here, Janet, I guess my question, and maybe we can explore it on the break and then we can come back to the continuing flow of this. The question's really coming from the place, is there a way out of this larger ground of wholeness of experience that we're able to use words as a bridging positive force in the world, and how might we do that on very challenging issues? But let's take a break, folks. Come back for our last segment here. Get even more clear on words potentially as divides, words potentially as holistic catalysts. How might that best serve us? Take a break. Coming back with Janet and I in just a moment.
Up-to-date business and financial news. Call now and get the financial information you need. 866-472-5790. 866-472-5790.
The experts are here.
Voice America Business Network.
The world is in flux, primed for a great transition, possibly an epical one. How does it impact you? Does it reshape the questions you ask? The way you view leadership. Today's complexities and challenges call for new realms of leadership. The world needs resilience and adaptability, new levels of innovation and brilliance. At Avastone Consulting, we know that our times call for shifts of mind. How do we cultivate real shifts of mind in our leaders? Not through conventional development, which focuses on gaining skills and knowledge within an established worldview. Shifts of mind truly expand the worldview itself, enlarge the capacity to see through new eyes, and transform interpretations of reality and the actions that accompany them. Those who embrace shifts of mind are the kind of leaders that Avastone helps to build. Change the way you pursue the future. Call Avastone Consulting at 1-678-461-888. 1-888-888-8880. That's 1-678-461-8880. Or visit avastoneconsulting.com. Avastone Consulting, your source for leadership development, working with complex organizations toward evolutionary shifts of mind.
Tune in every Tuesday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time for The Growth Strategist with Aldana Ambler. On the show, Aldana and some of today's top business professionals will discuss some of today's most pressing business issues that hold you, the business owner, back. Aldana will also give you 21 ways to grow with her list of growth strategies. Grow smart, grow profit, and grow your business with Aldana Ambler and The Growth Strategist every Tuesday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time. Right here on the Bottom Line in Business Talk, Voice America Business.
Voice America Business Network, the bottom line in business.
You're listening to Zoomed Leadership with your host, John Schmidt. For more information about John and our program, visit avastoneconsulting.com. That's avastoneconsulting.com. Now, back to Zoomed Leadership.
Okay, last segment today, Janet Smith Warfield, our guest. We are talking about words. We are talking about perspectives. We're talking about the way we live our own views and transformations. And Janet, I've just been exploring, sort of pushing around on this a little bit about different ways to engage in the world and how that might actually occur given some of the context you're describing. But to say some more, we were talking a little bit on break about the nature of dealing in situations where there is either tension, but where there be singular views, and just your thoughts on that.
Let me give you an example, John. Maybe this will show rather than tell where I personally stand on this, and I think everybody can stand on this. When I was a young lawyer, I worked for a partner in a large law firm who drove me nuts. He had me working 80 hours a week. He would have me finish one project, and then he'd change his mind and send me out on a second one. I was exhausted. He was a bit abusive and belligerent, and I really did not like this guy a lot, and yet I stayed because I needed the money. One day at a bar association meeting, I was talking to a friend of mine who was a judge and just a wonderful, wonderful, highly ethical man. I started ranting and raving to this judge about my boss at this law firm. The judge turned around and walked away. It was a huge lesson for me. As soon as he walked away and did not enable and support my rant and rave, there was nobody to talk to. I had no audience, and I shut up. And 6 months later, I left that job.
Yeah, so I get that. I get that it's not enabling and not actually it's allowing to be what's there but not enabling that. I'm just curious about the power in the words, Janet, of we don't change the world. We're really engaging and expressing ourselves. But I'm wondering at the same time, just on these issues which are so polarized, about thoughts you might have about the use and languaging and how, as leaders, we might express ourselves in this context, out of this ground of transformation, and what that might be doing and fulfilling, and how that can contribute.
And you keep wanting to pull this back into an overall solution. And I keep wanting to pull it back into a multitude of individual solutions. There is an overall solution, which is there are multiple perspectives. And once we get that, we're open to listening so that we can continue to learn and grow and become more powerful, more centered, more serene in our own lives, and more effective as leaders. Leadership comes from listening to everyone around you, collaborate, hearing all the points of view, listening to all the dialogue, the concerns, the frustrations, and then building solutions among the entire group. That's what leadership is about. It's not about having a right way to do things that you're going to impose from the top down. It's engaging everyone around you from the bottom up to the extent that they're open to being engaged. Some people are not. I personally don't deal with them. In my personal life, when I get into some kind of a funk or a low energy state, I pull back from it. I notice it. I'm thinking, oh, I'm in a place I don't want to be. So right now, in this moment, what do I think? What do I feel? What do I need? And what are my choices? And once I get answers for myself to those questions right now, in this moment, I am just fine again. I move out of abusive relationships. I move out of, I move away from people who have their own agenda and don't even know that they've got all kinds of subconscious agendas going on, who don't even understand that me against you does not work. We together is the only hope we have to change this planet. And that non-judgment and openness.
And so what I'm really hearing you say is you're really bringing this back, the answer to my question is bringing this back to the individual in the present moment, recognizing, being clear and aware about where we are, about our own patterns and our own expressions and emotions and what's there, and actually then engaging in the world out of a place of that presence and clarity and awareness. And what I'm hearing, Janet, is that's the leverage you're really describing for leadership in engaging with others as well, at least one foundational dimension of it.
That is the only leverage any one of us has, and we probably have to be in all those other mental and emotional spaces, some of which are not fun at all, before we can function from that place of present moment presence. Just taking the energy around us and using our words to move it toward peaceful collaboration, problem solving, and working together. That's leadership.
Right, and I think that's what we've been talking about on Zoom, is about the nature of that presence. And what I was just linking to is the power, as you're describing, of the words and the choice of the words and the inclusiveness of the words. And perhaps even the more the words not only engage the truth and the clarity and the authenticity of our own connection to the wholeness, but as more of the wholeness is really brought and nurtured and brought forward. I was just thinking that might be, as my reading of the book, one of the places that you are suggesting with the power of the words, that it is embracing and bringing forward and articulating the whole in expression as well. And that's really where I was heading. It was really more of a question in that realm than anything else.
I think the power comes from your connection, or the connection each one of us has with the whole. It comes from being willing to receive the energy and the wonderful things that are given to each one of us, even though some of them don't feel good in the moment, and then giving from that place or space of personal presence and power, and present moment always. It's a very, very safe place from which to function, because you always have choices. Lots of times it's a space where you're simply listening to another person, and sometimes you're suggesting different ways they can think about their situation, which they're free to accept or not. Lots of times when I'm talking with someone and I'll hear them say something like, oh, I'm terrible at remembering names, I'll just stop them mid-sentence and I'll say, did you hear what you just said? And they usually weren't paying any attention to the words that were coming out of their mouth. And then they'll pull back and they'll say, oh, my gosh, that was really negative, wasn't it? And by bringing that into my life.
And I think, Janet, that's a wonderful expression. And I know I can hear in the music we're heading toward the end of the show here. But let me be clear here. Janet, where do people find the book? I think it's a beautiful opportunity for people to explore shift, change your words, change the world, change your world. Where would they find it? Where would they be able to access it?
Well, they can certainly find it on my website, which is wordsculptures.com. They can find it on Amazon. I believe it's in at least some Barnes and Nobles. It's being distributed throughout the United States and Canada, in the United Kingdom, throughout the world, really. It's been translated into four languages. If you can't find it in your local bookstore, you ask the bookstore to order it for you. And as I say, it's always available online. All you have to do is do a search for Shift, Change Your Words, Change Your World.
Janet, great. Thank you. This is, I hope, just part one of a further conversation. I can see we've scratched the surface, but I love where you've left this, the personalness, the nature of the shift coming from ourselves. That's where it comes from. Thank you so much for joining us today. It's a delight to have you on Zoomed.
It's been a pleasure. Thanks, John.
Okay, thanks. Talk to you again. Listeners, we will continue with the conversation out to the big picture, into the up close and personal, leadership as leverage, presence as the underpinning. Have a great week, and as I always say, enjoy. Join us again. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you again for listening to Zoomed Leadership with host John Schmidt. Please be sure to join us again next Monday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time, 2 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel. And have a terrific week.